بسم الله والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله وعلى آله ومن ولا وبعد. Okay, this is our fifth session for basic Arabic grammar review.
السلام.
And today, inshallah, we're going to look at the verb, triliteral, past tense verb in Arabic. We're going to look at the six basic groups that it's divided into according to the voweling in the past tense and present tense forms. And we're going to also, inshallah, try to look at the conjugation of the past tense verb. But before we do that, we're going to look quickly at what we covered already in the past and give you opportunity to ask some questions. We don't have a lot of time before the salah, but this is the time. If you have questions, this is a good opportunity to ask them. Okay, in the past we covered, for example, from the most important things that we covered were the parts of speech in Arabic. Okay? Parts of speech in Arabic, which are what? What are the parts of... How many parts of speech are there?
Three
parts of speech. Okay, one of them?
Al-fi'lu.
Al-fi'lu, which means what? The verb. And another part?
Al-harf.
Al-harf means what?
A particle.
Like, for example... Fee, okay, the fee, like ala, yani prepositions, okay, and also conjunctions, like wow, or fa, or thumma. Third part of speech, ismun, and ismun is very important, right, because it encompasses a lot of things. Okay, the ismun means, technically it means a noun, but when we look at the Arabic grammar, we see that the noun is broke up into a number of things. From amongst those things, we have what? A pronoun, What else?
Adjective.
Pronoun
is dhamir.
Yeah, pronoun is dhamir, noun. And we have adjective also. And we have, A sifa is the adjective, okay? What about the name of a person, like Muhammad?
No.
Proper nouns, okay? And the name of things that are shared, like a house or a tree, this is a common noun. Okay, so we have common noun, we have proper noun, we have pronoun, different types of pronouns, demonstrative pronoun, relative pronoun. A lot of things come under here. Also, importantly, under noun comes the... that's a construction. But a word, that comes under noun is like an adverb that shows the position of something, or it could be in reference to place or time. Okay, adverb. So all of these come under noun, and we talked about them in detail in the past. The other thing that we want to look at just quickly... is that the noun in Arabic can be looked at from different perspectives. For example, a noun can have alif lam or tanween, which means what?
Indefinite.
That it's indefinite or definite. Okay, so nouns in Arabic are indefinite or definite. The main sign for a noun to be indicated as definite is alif lam. But there are different types of nouns that don't have alif lam and they are also definite. Okay, so we talked about that a little bit and we'll look at it as we go along in more detail. And the main thing that indicates a noun to be indefinite is the ending with a double vowel, a double dhamma or double kasra or double fatha. This is called tanween. Naam. And we also said, though, that there are some words that have tanween and they are not indefinite. Okay, so keep that in our mind. Another way to look at the nouns, besides them being definite and indefinite, is that some nouns may end with ta marbuta, which indicates that it's what?
Feminine.
So there are words in Arabic that are feminine, and then there are others that are masculine. Mudhakkar and mu'annath.
طيب بسم الله والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله وعلى آله ومن ولا وبعد.
Yeah. So as we were saying, before the adhan, we said that nouns in Arabic are definite or indefinite, and they're also masculine or feminine. They're also masculine or feminine. And then another way of looking at nouns, and by the way, I should mention that indeed the most common indication that a noun is indefinite is by it ending with ta marbuta. However, there are plenty of words in Arabic that are feminine that have other feminine indications other than ta marbuta, and there are some that have no indication and they're still feminine. And finally, there are some words that end with ta marbuta and they're not feminine, like some proper nouns. Like what? Usama or Hamza, Talha, Muawiyah, and so on like this. Okay? So these are things that we covered. I'm just trying to repeat some of these things again and again and again so that hopefully it will stick with us. We don't want to keep going and forget about what we had before, right? So this is like just a reminder, quick reminder about some of these things. You could go back and look at the notes, and hopefully some of these things will remain with us as we go along and we build upon them. Another way of looking at the noun in Arabic is that is in reference to its i'rab. And by i'rab, we mean the ending of the word, which indicates its function in the sentence. Is it, for example, marfu'un or mansubun or majrurun? Okay, and we wrote these words up here. And marfu'un means it's in the nominative case, and majrurun means it's in the genitive case, and mansubun means it's in the accusative case. In the accusative case, the primary indication that it's accusative or mansub is that it ends with fatha. And for the genitive case, the primary indication that it's majrur is that it ends with kasra. And for the nominative case or marfu'un, the primary indication is dhamma. And the reason why I say primary indication, because they're also secondary indications. And there are certain classes of words in Arabic that their i'rab or their case ending is indicated by other than these primary indications, other than fatha, kasra, or dhamma. They have other indications that we'll look at in the future. But in any case, these are the primary indications, meaning these are the most common indications that a word is nominative, accusative, or genitive. However, there are other classes of words, duals and plurals, feminine sound plurals, masculine sound plurals, and in mamnu' words that are mamnu' min al-sarf, and so on. These classes of words have secondary endings that we'll look at in the future. The other thing that's very, very important that we covered in the past, and we want to make sure that it's clear in our mind, very, very fundamental foundation that we build upon, is that the Arabic sentences are of two types. There's the jumla ismiya and there's the jumla fi'liya. Jumla ismiya means that it begins with an ism, a noun. And if the first word of a sentence is a noun, an ism, then this is a jumla ismiya. Jumla fi'liya means that it begins with a fi'l. So if the first word of a sentence is a fi'l, a verb, then that means that this is a jumla fi'liya. Okay, what we are concerned about at this level is the jumla ismiya. We said it has two component parts, which are the mubtada and khabar. Mubtada and khabar, subject, predicate. Mubtada means the subject that you want to talk about. Usually it begins the sentence, usually. Doesn't have to, but usually it does. And the khabar means information, means what we want to say about the subject. We have a subject and we want to tell you something about it. This is the subject, mubtada. I begin with it. This is the khabar, information, what I want to say about it. Okay, the boy is big. The boy is the subject, big is the predicate. Yani mubtada and khabar. Naam.
Last time you explained that the mubtada is come out from abada.
From bada, bada. Yes.
When it is a bada, start. So then how it will be not, you see, like in some cases there will be not like a mubtada in the start.
Not exactly.
Okay. Al mubtada is beginning.
Mubtada means beginning, now.
Bada.
Bada, to begin.
So then in what you say, in some cases it will be not in beginning.
Yeah, it's possible that it won't be in the beginning. No.
So then, you see like the bada.
Yeah.
The meaning is you in this.
All right, I'll just say that mubtada, the word mubtada means, in English they call it the subject of a sentence. And it's what you want to talk about. In Arabic they call it mubtada, because this word mubtada is from ba-da-a, bada. Bada means to begin. Okay? And usually, the subject of the sentence is what you begin with. Yani, when you start talking about something, unless it's, what do you call those guessing games? A quiz or something, contest. You usually mention the subject and then you say what you want to say about it, right? So that's the norm, that you're going to begin with the subject. But it's possible in certain situations that you might not begin with the subject. It's possible. Okay? It's possible that a person might walk up to you and say, a big one. And you say, a big one? What does that mean? Right? So they didn't begin with the subject. But it's possible. That could happen. A person might say that. They might, you know, for whatever reason, they might be doing it. But it's possible, okay? So in Arabic, it's permissible that the khabar can come first. It's permissible, but it has rules. If you do that, you have to follow those rules. Okay, you have to follow the rules. So when you follow those rules, it becomes clear to the person who knows Arabic grammar, it becomes clear that this is not the subject. Even though I'm beginning with it, they will know it's not the subject. Because why are you following certain rules? There are guidelines that you have to stick to. They're very strict guidelines that you have to follow in order to put these things out of their order. Okay, to take them out of their place. So when you do that, it becomes clear that this is not the mubtada. Huh?
Still we may call them.
Yeah, because why? Because it still begins with the ism. Because yani the mubtada is a noun, and the khabar is also a noun. Or it might be a phrase, maybe. Sometimes the khabar can be, it might not be a single word, it may be a prepositional phrase or adverbial phrase. Anyway, these details of this, is we're going to look at them. But near the end of this course, we're going to look at them, okay, in detail. But for now, the important thing is, generally speaking, the mubtada is usually the start of the sentence. But in some cases, it's possible, if you follow the rules, it can come second. It's possible, yes, all right? But the general rule, this word comes from the general rule, that we usually, generally begin with the mubtada. And then that's an exception to the rule when we don't begin with it. Now, so I guess we could say, like for example, that Abdul Halim, he's a mailman. He delivers mail. But sometimes he's not delivering mail. Sometimes he's building houses. He's also a builder. Okay? So, yani generally, for the last 25, 30 years, 32 years, he's a mailman. But sometimes he takes off his mailman outfit and puts on his building outfit. And he starts building houses and building bathrooms and basements and laying floors and dropping ceilings. And now, so, yani, sometimes we may have more than one yani feature about something. And the general feature of mubtada is that we begin with it. That's general speaking. But sometimes we don't begin with it. Now, any question before we yani stop? Any question? Okay, so these are the main things that we talked about. The case endings, definite, indefinite, masculine, feminine, parts of speech, types of sentences, mubtada, khabar. In the last class, we looked at those exercises, which yani basically were designed to yani give us a better hold on the idea of nouns being definite and indefinite, and being yani the different case endings from nominative, accusative, and genitive, and so on, masculine and feminine. And hopefully, yani, everybody understood those things well. We did a lot of exercise, and hopefully you reviewed it, and hopefully you don't have any problem. At the end of the class last week, we talked about the verbs, and that's what we're going to do today. Now, Zarf al-Zaman.
Uh-huh. What is the example?
Okay, we're going to come to adverbs, and we're going to talk about that in detail. Okay, I don't want to step ahead, but just to answer your question, we say that the dharf, the adverb, is of two types. There's the adverb that relates to time, and the adverb that relates to place. Okay? So the adverb that relates to place is called dharf al-makan, place, makan. And the adverb that relates to time is called dharf al-zaman. Zaman means time. Alright? So as far as the dharf al-makan, the dharf al-makan related to place is, it shows the position of something. It's in front of or behind, walaikum salam, above or below, okay, shows place. The dharf al-zaman indicates the time in which something is happening. Yani it happened, walaikum salam wa rahmatullah. Like it happened today, al-yawma. Or it happened yesterday, amsi. Or it's happening right now, al-ana. Okay, when did it happen or when is it happening? The time frame, that's called dharf al-zaman. Okay, like you say, ja'a Al-Mudarris Al-Yawma. When did he come? Today. Al-Yawma. So that's the Dharf Al-Zaman. Indicates when he came. Okay? Like this. This is an example of Dharf Al-Zaman. Indicating the time when something happens. That's right. Ja'a al-mudarrisu, alaykum salam, al-yawma. Waja'a al-mudarrisu amsi. Waja'tu, ana ja'tu, al-ana. Right now. And so on, like this, okay? Alright, we're going to stop here, right? And when we return after salat, we're going to go into the topic for today, which is the triliteral past tense verb. We're going to look at the six groups of that they are divided into. Primarily four of them that we are concerned with at this level, and then we're going to look at the conjugation of the past tense verb a little bit, inshallah. That will be our subject for today. Subhanakallah, inshallah. Astaghfirullah.
Bismillah, wa salatu wa salam ala rasulillah wa ala ali wa man wala wa ba'd.
Okay, this is our fifth session, or I should say the second part of our fifth session for basic Arabic grammar review. And today, as we mentioned last week, we're going to talk about the topic of the triliteral past tense verb. And we mentioned it briefly last week that there are six groups that they are divided into. We're going to look at those at this time. But before we do that, if anybody has a question about what we covered, any last week or the weeks before, related to the parts of speech, or the nouns being definite, indefinite, masculine, feminine, nominative, accusative, genitive, Jumla ismiya, mubtada, khabar, anything that we covered in the past. If there's no question, and we reviewed it before the salat, but if somebody has a question, inshallah, we'd like to give you a chance before we start the subject for today. And if there's no question, then inshallah, let's look at the topic of today. Today's topic, and in our notes on page 6, the sound triliteral verbs. Okay, there are a couple of things that I want to say before we look at this chart. First and foremost is that we're talking about past tense verb, okay? So I want to say first that what is a verb? Yani what do we mean when we say yani fi'l? What do we mean by it? Now, dukri. Okay, it's a word that shows action, it indicates action, like eating, drinking, sitting, walking, reading, writing, huh? It shows action. And he said also time. He said time. What does he mean by time? It shows time. Like somebody else, now.
Past tense.
Present tense. Yani something that happened already, or something that's happening, or it may show, it may indicate what? An action that's going to take place in the future. Okay, so it indicates time. There's one more element to the verb that's very, very important. Somebody else help us. Yani it's a word that indicates action. It also shows a time frame of the action and... okay, yani, we'll talk about that. That's related to the verb, yani, the object of some verbs have an object, yani, that they affect, yani, now. Huh? The file. Yani, a verb in Arabic, it indicates an action, right? So the Arabic verb also indicates the doer of the action, the file. Okay, so this is very, very important that the one who is doing the action, Walaikum salam. The doer of the action, okay? The doer of the action is indicated in the verb itself. Yani when you see a verb in Arabic, one word, that word tells you about a certain action. It tells you a time frame for that action, and it also tells you the doer of the action. Yani the one who's doing the action, the fa'il, the subject, who is it? Who is doing the action? Yani, is it the first person, the speaker? Is it the second person, the one who is being spoken to? Or is it the third person, one who is being spoken about? The verb in Arabic, within itself, it contains, within its structure, an indication of who's doing the action. It indicates whether or not it is singular or dual or plural. It indicates whether or not it is masculine or feminine. All of this is indicated in this one word, that is a verb. Okay? So this is very important. When we talk about the verb today, we have to keep in mind that this is a word in Arabic. It has to contain these three elements. An indication of some action, a time frame for that action, and the doer of the action. So for example, if we had this word here, right, as an example, right, this word here, this is a verb. It's a past tense verb. Triliteral, past tense verb. Okay? What's the action that it indicates? Huh?
Writing.
And the word book, kitab, comes from this verb, kataba, now. But it comes from that. But the root meaning of it is talking about writing, the action of writing. Okay, what time frame is it? Now.
Past tense.
Past tense. Meaning, it happened already in the past. And who's the doer of the action? The Kareem. Turn him a little bit. Salaam alaikum. Okay, it's good. Now. Okay, now, the first person. First person singular. Okay, so it tells us the doer of the action is the first person. It also tells us that this is an individual, one person, it's singular. It's not plural. Alright? So this word, katabtu, this is a verb. This is an example of a verb. And every verb, when we look at it, we're going to see that there's an indication in it. Either it is clearly showing us who's the doer of the action, or within it, there is, yani it's understood that the doer of the action, yani is, yani for example, third person masculine, singular, or third person, yani feminine, singular. Otherwise, the endings of the past tense verb tell us who's doing the action. Except in those which have a pronoun that is yani included within the verb. It's understood to be there. Yani dhamir mustatir. Alright, so this is a verb. Now, the second thing we're going to say about verbs is that there are three forms of the verb. There's the past tense form, al-fi'l al-madi, and then there's the present tense form that may also indicate future, fi'l al-mudari, and then there's the third one, which is what? Fi'l amr, the command or imperative form. Okay, so today what we're going to talk about, we're going to talk about the past tense form. Okay, we're not going to talk about the fi'l mudari, we're not going to talk about the fi'l amr. Basically, we're going to look at the past tense form. And it says here triliteral, and that's because verbs in Arabic, they may be thulathi, meaning they have three radicals, three root letters, as in this one here has ka, ta, ba. And this, that's added at the end of it, as a suffix, is really an indication of the doer of the action, the fa'il, okay? So they are triliteral verbs, and then they are also verbs that are ruba'i. That means that they have four radicals that are from the actual root, not something added to it, okay? So we're talking about today those which are triliteral. And also this type of verb is called mujarrad as opposed to mazid. And that's something that's advanced. But just as a point of information, there are verbs in Arabic, mujarrad, meaning that they only have the three or four letters that's from the original root. Okay, and then there's mazid, verbs that there are extra letters added to them. Okay, a subdivision of this one here, extra letters added to it to modify the meaning. Okay, and that's something that we'll talk about in the future. But this is the general subject of the verb, yani, that there's the madi, the mudari, and the amr. And today we just want to talk about the madi. There's thulathi and ruba'i, triliteral, that has three letters, and the other one that has four. And today we only want to talk about the triliteral. Now, mazid, yeah, mujarrad and mazid. But of course, that's something, yani, for the future, yani, down the line. Okay, but just to have, yani, a good, yani, a general picture of the subject of the verb. These are some of the things that you should be keeping in mind. Okay, now, what we mentioned last week in the end of the class, and we talked about it very, very briefly, just so that we could be aware, right? So we have an idea. We come into the class this week, we have an idea what we're going to be talking about. You have a chance to look at it and think about it, okay? We said that this type of verb, this triliteral verb that doesn't have any letters of increase, that is divided into six subdivisions. Yani, they're called abwab. Abwab is the plural of bab. Okay? Bab. These six subdivisions, as we will see when we look through, yani, the what they have given us here, We'll see, for example, that the first example they gave us is Nasara. Nasara. And this verb Nasara, this is the past tense form, and the mudari form is Yansuru. And it says here on the chart, and if you're looking on the right side of the page, right? Group AU. This is from group what? AU. Then they gave us Bab Nasara. And on the next line under it, it says Nasara Yansuru. Okay, so from what we mentioned last week, who can tell us why is this called Bab AU? Yani Fatha Dhamma. Naam. Akbar.
Yeah, like the past tense, the second,
the middle radical?
Yeah, then we start from Dhamma.
Okay.
And the third one, no, the first one will come from Dhamma, and the second one will be Fatha.
Okay, this is AU group, this is English, right? Going from A to U. In Arabic, we're going this way, right?
Yes.
So the first letter should be Fatha, and the second letter should be
Dhamma.
But how do we get this Fatha and Dhamma? We're looking at the root of the word, right? Triliteral root. This is the root. Noon, Sad, Ra. This is the root. Noon, Sad, and Ra. Here we have something added here, right? This is an extra letter. That's not from the root. That's the harf mudara, meaning it's the letter that's added in the beginning of the mudari verb. It's added in the beginning of it to indicate, yani, the doer of the action. Yani, you may add as a prefix to the mudari verb, ya, or ta, or noon, or hamza. And that will tell you something about who's the doer of the action, okay? So this is added. The actual root is noon, sad, and ra, okay? So again, the same root here, noon, sad, ra, same root here, noon, sad, ra. We're looking at the root, okay? This is what we're looking at. As far as the root, one moment, right? As far as the root, we want to look at the middle letter of the root, the second letter, which is called the Ayn. Yani Fa, Ayn, Lam. Yani if we're looking at the patterns, we have Fa, Ayn, and Lam. So the first radical is called the Fa. And the second radical is called the Ayn. And the third radical is called the Lam. We're looking at the second radical in the past tense and the second radical root letter in the present tense. Forget about this extra letter. That's not part of the root. That's not part of the root. Okay, that's a prefix that you use for the mudari. Okay, it can be ya, it can be ta, it can be noon, it can be hamza. Alright? But what we want to look at is the root. Forget about the mudara letter. In the root, the second letter of the root. Huh? Here it has fatha, and in the mudari, the second letter of the root has dhamma. Okay? That's what we want to look at. The second letter of the root. In this word, the second letter is the sad. In the past tense, it has fatha. In the present tense, it has dhamma. Therefore, it is fatha dhamma group. Go ahead.
A little confused, because when you did the etaptu, you said the ta was the one that was added at the end.
Okay. This ta is added at the end. Okay. Okay.
And so when you look at the one that we're doing now, in that sense, the ya is supposed to be the third person, right? And so how does, like, it's confusing because it's showing a different sequence in how that one is. And
okay. Let me try to clarify a little bit, okay? That you may be a little bit ahead, right? Because I'm just trying to give you the outline of this classification. How did this classification come from? Okay, but let me just say this so that it will be clear to you. The first thing is that the past tense verb has a suffix added to it. The present tense verb has a prefix added to it. So these are two different things. Don't get them mixed up. Past tense has one way of operation. Present tense has a different manner of operation. Alright? So don't try to compare them to each other. Yani the ta in the end, the ta in the beginning. In the beginning, that's for mudari verb. That's present tense verb. This time in the end is a suffix that's used with a past tense verb. It has a different meaning in the present tense and past tense. The prefix and suffix, they don't have any relation to each other. Prefix is used for present tense verb, mudari, and suffix is used for past tense verb. But they don't have the same meaning. This ta here, if there was a ta in the beginning here, there's no relation between this ta and that ta. So this is a mudari verb, and this is a madi verb. Okay, so this suffix has one meaning in a past tense verb. The prefix in the present tense verb has a different meaning altogether. Okay, we're not really concerned about the mudari verb right now. We're looking at the past tense verb, but only to understand this classification. Why is it called AU group? I'm only mentioning the mudari verb for that reason. Don't worry about the mudari verb now, about its prefix and the letters that are added to it. Don't worry about that, because we're only talking about past tense verbs. But for the classification purpose, I want you to understand, where did they get AU from? Where does it come from? It comes from looking at the past tense verb and the present tense verb. Okay, the middle, the second radical, the ayn, the second radical of the past tense verb gives you one vowel, and the second radical of the present tense verb gives you the second vowel that makes it AU group. Alright, let's look at the next example you gave us so it become more clear. Okay, because if you're not familiar with this classification, obviously, and it's not going to become clear except with more examples. So they have given us six examples here, or more than six, but we want to look at six examples. Four of them are important to us, and the other two we'll look at in the future in detail. Alright, so let's just look at it a little bit further. Okay, what's the next example they gave us? Okay, they gave us Daraba. Daraba Yadribu. Daraba Yadribu. Okay, here, this is the second one. Daraba. Daraba Yadribu. Yadribu. Okay, what is the meaning of Daraba? To hit, to strike. I need to hit. Okay, ضربه. He hit him. ضربه, this is the past tense. We're looking at the middle radical, right? We're looking at the middle radical, which in this case is what? Fatha. And then here, this is the mudara letter. We don't want to look at that, right? We want to look at the root. ضربه. And the middle letter here gives us what vowel? Kasra. In which case, we will say that then this is from which group? Fatha. Kasra, Fatha, Kasra group. Okay, this is Fatha, Kasra group. Right, because in the past tense it has Fatha in the middle letter, and in the present tense it has Kasra in the middle letter. So they said here that this is AI group. Okay, AI group. They said group AI, Bab, Daraba, Yadribu. Daraba has Fatha on the past tense middle letter, and it has Kasra on the present tense middle letter. Daraba Yadribu. Any question about the second one? How we got Fatha Kasra? Naam. Walaikum salam.
The prefix on the word will take up the group. Is that right?
I didn't get the question. Again.
Okay, like you got Daraba.
Daraba.
Okay, then you have
Yadribu.
Yadribu. So then the first letter, which is the prefix, right?
You're talking about here, Yadribu?
Yeah, it's a prefix.
This is a prefix for the mudari verb.
Okay, but that takes the
pattern. We're not concerned about the prefix. We're concerned about the root of the verb. The root of the verb, look, brothers, the root of the verb is what? Da, ra, ba. The root here is also daraba. This is something that has been added as a prefix. That's not part of the root. We're only concerned about the middle letter of the root. The root only. If you add something to it in the beginning or in the ending, don't worry about that. We're looking at the root only. The root of the word, okay? So in the root of this word, there's dad, ra, and ba. And the same thing here, there's dad, ra, and ba. So we are looking at the middle letter of the root. What is the middle letter of the root here? Fatha. And the middle letter of the root here is kasra. Sharif? You with us? All right, let's stop for a minute, okay? Let me just say this. First of all we're looking at is why we're saying that there are six abwab, six subcategories for the past tense triliteral verb. Six categories, six subdivisions. They classify them with these letters, these vowels, fatha fatha, fatha kasra, fatha dhamma, kasra kasra, kasra fatha. These are classifications of each group. What is this classification based upon? It's based on the middle letter of the root. First of the past tense form, and then the present tense form. Okay? The key word here, brothers, sisters, is that we're looking at the root only. If anything is added to the word, we're not concerned about that. In the present tense, we're going to add a prefix, but we're not counting that in terms of the second letter, the middle letter. The middle letter, there are only three letters of the root. We said this is triliteral. So if there's four letters there, one of those letters is not part of the root. Which letter is not part of the root? The prefix that we just added as a prefix. So the root only has three letters, and we're looking at the second letter of the root. Sharif. Naam. The first letter of the root is Dad. The second letter of the root is Ra. And the third letter of the root is Ba. What we want is the second letter, which in this case, Yani, in the Mudari form is Kasra. Be patient for a minute. Let's look at another example. Let's look at another example. Okay, third example they gave us is AA group, right? Fataha. Okay, here's another example. Look at this one. Fataha. Fataha. What's the root of this word? The root, triliteral root, is fa, ta, and ha. Okay? The middle letter of the root is fatha. In the mudari you have yaftahu. Yaftahu. Okay. Again, we want to look at the middle letter, right? The middle letter for the past tense form is ta, right? And its vowel is fatha. The middle letter for the present tense form is still ta. Ta is the root. Yani fa ta ha, and its vowel is fatha, which means that this group is called the what? Fatha fatha or a group. Naam, Ibrahim. Any verb that has fatha in the middle letter of the root in past tense, it has dhamma in the middle letter of the root in present tense, any verb that has fatha in the past tense and dhamma in the present tense, that's AU group. There are verbs that have fatha and dhamma. And then there are other verbs that don't have fatha and dhamma. They have fatha and kasra. So all the ones that have fatha and kasra, that's AI group. Change the group?
Yeah, change the group.
A verb in Arabic, yani for example, fataha yaftahu. It's fataha yaftahu. You can't change it. And you can you change house to haste? Yani house is house, right? And fataha is fataha. You can't change it. Yani its vowels are fixed. The Arabs fixed it. They said to open it means fataha. You can't change it to fatiha, fatuha. It's fataha, that's it. You can't change it.
What's the rule to know if it's in the AU group, the A?
There's no rule. There's no rule to know. You just learn it. And it was the rule to know that you spell story S-T-O-R-Y. You have to memorize it. Yani when you learn a word, you just memorize it, right? There's no rule. There's no rule. It's just that these letters, they put them together. They said this word means something in our language. That's it. Khalas. There's no rule for it. It's just memorization.
I think there is one confusion. If I ask him, do you not understand that? What is A and what is I and what is U?
I understand what it is.
That is the major confusion, I think.
No.
Okay.
It was more because I just thought, depending on...
The groups are not interchangeable.
Okay.
A verb, its vowels are fixed, okay? They are fixed. And whatever group they fall into based on their vowels, the way that they are fixed, that's what group they belong to. You can't move them to another group. Now, Abdul Shakur.
You probably said it over and over. But overall, this lesson is to teach us what?
This lesson is to teach us about the past tense verb, okay? And the first part of knowing the verbs is knowing which group they belong to. I need just to know that verbs, some of them belong to the same group, meaning they're the middle. Look, in the root of the triliteral verb, the first letter of the root always has fatha. The second letter of the root always has, I mean, the third letter of the root always has fatha. The middle letter is the one that changes. The middle letter of the root can change. It can be a fatha, kasra, or dhamma. That's why we'll see different groups. Some of them are going to have, in the past tense, the middle letter is going to be fatha. Some of them are going to have the middle letter as kasra. And some of them are going to have the middle letter as dhamma. It can be any vowel. But whatever vowel it is, once you learn it, you can't change it. It's fixed. Different words.
Different roots.
No.
No, same.
Listen.
English words, A-U, they make confusion.
Don't worry about English words AU, okay? Listen, brothers, this is not complicated, okay? This is very simple, okay? Listen to what I'm saying. Hold on a minute, please. Brothers, please. This is not really complicated, okay? The only thing I want you to understand now is that the past tense verb, it's categorized into different groups. The way they place it in a group is based on its vowel in the past tense and its vowel in the present tense. That's it. It's no more than that. It's no more than that. How do you know which group it belongs to? When you look it up in the dictionary, you'll see the vowel in the past tense is fatha, or it's kasra, or it's dhamma. That's how you know what it is. You look in the dictionary, you see it there. Or somebody who knows tells you. When you look up the mudari verb, yani in some dictionaries, most dictionaries, they'll give you, after the verb, right after, they'll give you a vowel. That vowel is for the mudari. So it's telling you what the vowel is going to be on the middle letter. The middle letter is the only one that's going to change. It can be fatha, it can be kasra, it can be dhamma. But whatever it is, it stays like that. It doesn't change. Yani, tomorrow you want to change it to something else. No, it's fixed, okay? So once you know what it is, that's what it is. If it has fatha, that belongs to all the verbs that have fatha, they're one group. If it has fatha, kasra, all the verbs that have fatha, kasra, they're one group. Okay? If it has fatha, dhamma, then it belongs to the group of all the verbs that have fatha, dhamma. That's it. It's no more than that. It's just a classification of the past tense verb. There are different groups. Some of them have fatha in the past tense and in the present tense. Some of them have fatha in the past tense, but they have dhamma in the present tense, or kasra in the present tense. So this is all we're looking at. Now, I need the vowel changing from one verb to another. The vowel combination may be different. Whatever it is fixed on that. It doesn't change. And once you learn that it's fatha and fatha, that's it. You stuck with that. Okay? If you learn that it's fatha and dhamma, then that's what it is. Now.
Most times when they give you the verb, they give you the past tense, and they'll give you the present tense. That's why you say AU. They'll give you the past tense of that verb, and then they'll give you the present tense of that verb. And that's it. You're saying that it's based on the middle radical. That's going to change. And those letters that come in that. With that group, fatha, in the past tense, it's going to stay like that. In the present tense, it may be fatha, maybe kasra, maybe dhamma. It will stay in that group. They give you a verb, they give you the past tense of it, and then they give you the present tense of it.
Okay. The purpose of our discussion right now is for you to understand the chart. Okay? If you don't grasp it completely, don't worry about it. It's not essential at this level that you understand this chart, but if you understand it, it's good. Okay, if you don't, we're going to go on to the next point, and the next point is more important than this point. Okay, so I don't want to get stuck on this. I want to go to what is more important than this. This classification of groups is not essential for you right now. If you know it, alhamdulillah, you know it. If you don't know it, don't worry about it. Now.
This is not the root. This is the division of all the verbs.
This is the division of past tense verbs. Okay.
Because I was looking at it more the same way towards the way we were doing and all the rest. I was thinking it was based on how you were speaking or something, so that would classify if it's AU,
no.
AA, so, but
No, it has nothing to do with that. No, not like that. No, that's a different point altogether. Zakalocha. Okay, this is a third. This is the third group that they have given us. Let's look at the fourth group. The fourth group is U group. Bab Karoma. Karoma. Okay. I'm going to put it over here because this group right here I'm not that concerned about. Karoma. Yak. Okay, this particular group, they said it is what group? Dhamma? Dhamma, Dhamma. Okay? Why is it Dhamma, Dhamma? Because in the past tense, the middle letter, which is Ra, this middle letter, Ra, has Dhamma. And in the present tense, the middle letter, Ra, has Dhamma. So this is what? Dhamma, Dhamma. U, Dhamma, Dhamma group. Alright? The next group they gave us, I'm concerned about, is Kesra Fatta, Semia. Semia, Kesra, or IA group, right? Semia, Semia, yes, Ma'u. Okay, again, the same thing we want to look at, the middle letter, is what? Is meme. Its vowel is kesra. The middle letter, the meme, in the present tense, its vowel is what? Fatha. For that reason, we say that this group is kesra, fatha, or IA. IA, right? Because it has I in the past tense, and it has A in the present tense. The last group they gave us is I group, hasiba. Hasiba, I'm going to put it over here again. Hasiba. Ha, si, ba, right? Yah, si, bu. And again, the middle letter of the root, the middle letter of the root is what? Is seen. Seen. Right? And the seen, the same seen here in the, is the middle letter, right? But its vowel in the past tense in this one is kesra. And its vowel in the present tense is also kesra. So we say this is kesra, kesra. I group. Okay, all of this, Yani, what is important here are these four groups on the top. I put these down here because these two groups we're not going to look at this level. We're not going to look at them. But just to know that there are two more subdivisions, the ones that we want to look at, that we're going to see are these four on the top. All right? The main thing about this classification is that they are looking at the middle letter of the root. The root. If you want to know the root of the past of the verb, look at the past tense, because the past tense only has three letters. You might get confused when you look at the present tense because we added a prefix to it. Now you have four letters. Okay, so just look at the past tense. Whatever letter is the middle letter in the past tense, in this case is sad, you want to look at that same sad in the present tense. Okay, so you know it's fatha, dhamma. Here, the middle letter, ba, ra, ba, the middle letter is ra. And you want to look at ra here again. The same ra, the same letter. You don't even have to count it. Once you know ra is the middle letter, that's what you're looking for, ra. In past and present tense. Ra here has fatha, and here it has kesra. So we say it is fatha kesra group. In this one, the middle letter, fa, ta, ha. The middle letter is ta. So we're going to look at ta here, and we're going to look at ta here. So we have what? Fatha, fatha, AA group. And here, the middle letter, seen, meem, ayn. The middle letter is meem. So we're going to look at meem here, we're going to look at meem here. Okay? Here the meem has kesra, here the meem has fatha, so we say it is kesra, fatha group. Now.
Okay, I think I got it a little bit.
Okay, that's good. That's better.
The first verb.
That brings a smile to us.
Yeah, the first verb is going to be what the first vowel is.
Okay.
And the second way you spell it out is going to be the second vowel on that, or the past tense, whatever. In other words, what I'm trying to say is, let's say we got Karuma, the second one, right?
Karuma.
Okay. So then, the second time I
Yeah, because you're going to use the same, the root letters. You're only going to look at the root letters. Karoma is still going to be Karoma. The letters that you're looking at are the same three letters. And we're only dealing with the second letter of that root. Okay? The root, we see it in the past tense. Only three letters. Those are the same three letters you want to look at in the present tense. Only those three letters you want to look at. So whichever letter is in the middle in the past tense, that same letter is what you're going to look for in the present tense. Okay, before you ask a question, let me just complete the last two examples. The example he just gave us, Karoma, the middle letter is Ra. So we would look for Ra again. In both cases, Ra has Dhamma. So this is Dhamma, Dhamma group, or UU. And this one, Ha, Si, Ba, the middle letter is Seen. So you want to look for Seen in both cases. Seen here is Kesra, and Seen here is Kesra. So this is Kesra, Kesra group, or I. Okay, now, you have a question, brother?
Yeah, what's the point of classifying the verb like this?
What's the point of it? The point of it is to know that the past tense verb, they are different. Verbs are different, one from another. What is the difference between them? The middle letter of the root of the verb changes in past tense and in present tense. The middle letter is the only one that changes. Some of them, in the past tense, have fatta, and in the present tense have fatta. Some of them in the past tense have fatta, and in the present tense have kesra. And some of them have fatta in the past tense, and in the present tense, dhamma. So we want to look at all those that have fatta and make them one group. That's one group. They all have what in common? They have fatta in past and present tense. Some of them have dhamma in past and present tense. So that's another group. So they're just saying that these verbs are like these. They all have dhamma and dhamma. These verbs are like these. They all have kesra. That's it. It's just for a purpose of identifying those which are similar to one another. They're following the same vowel combination in past and present tense. That means they're one group. That's it. I mean, why do you want to identify children that are all in the first grade and those which are in the second grade? Because they have something in common. They're all in the first grade. These are first grade students. These are second grade students. These are boys. These are girls. They're all human beings, right? But we're classifying them according to what they have in common. These are boys and these are girls. These are first grade students. These are second grade students. Why do we want to classify them? Well, if you don't want to, you don't have to. No problem. I'm saying to you here, this classification is not essential for you now. But if you want to understand that the past tense verb is classified into six groups, this is the basis of the classification. This is what they have based it. They didn't just make it up and say all of these belong to one group and these belong to another with no reasoning. There's a basis for the classification, and this is the basis. That's it. That's the end of it, and there's no need to go any further with it. Okay, now. Yeah, you can call it that. I mean, it's not required to call it Daraba and Nasara group. That's just an example that they gave. They gave Nasara. They could have given a different example. They could have gave Dakhala group. Because Dakhala has Fatta in the past tense and Dhamma in the present tense. Dakhala Yadkhulu. So you can say it's Dakhala group if you want. You can say it's Kharaja group. That's Kharaja Yakhruju. They use that as an example. That's all. Okay, the name of it is not really Nasara group. But Nasara is an example for that group because it's an example for all those verbs that have fatta and then dhamma. That's it. Okay, but that's not really the name of it. It's just, that's an example that represents that particular group. Alright, let's go on to that which is more important. And again, as I said, Yani, this classification, if it's clear to you, alhamdulillah, if it's not, it'll become clear in the future when you study the verbs in detail. We didn't look at mudari verbs at all. So this mudari verb is something, yani, that we're not familiar with. And we're not going to look at it now. So that's why I'm saying don't worry so much about that. That's just for you to understand the basis of the classification is based on looking at the past tense and present tense verb. That's it. Okay, don't worry about the present tense verb. We're not concerned about that. What we are concerned about, which is more important, is the past tense verb, and that's what we want to look at now. Na'am, akhi. You have what? Samia.
So when we change it, we have a small.
Uh huh.
So So what gives us the logic that that ayin should take domo?
That the ayin should take
domo. That doesn't fit.
Oh, why it takes Dhamma? There's no logic. That's just the way the Arabs did it. I mean, it's their language. They do what they want with it. They made it take Dhamma. That's it. Khalas. Look, brother. Look. There doesn't have to be logic to why somebody does something a certain way. It doesn't have to be logical. But it is a rule that the mudari verb in Arabic, the present tense verb, ends with Dhamma. In its natural condition, it ends with Dhamma. All of them. Until something acts upon it and makes it change to fatha or makes it change to sukoon. Something has to act upon it to make it change. Otherwise, the original ruling for the mudari verb, the last letter, always takes dhamma. It's not logical. It's just that's the way they made the rule. That's all. Simple as that. We don't need to go any further with it. That's it. That's the way they made it. That's what it is.
Sorry, something I don't understand.
Yes.
Yes, more present tense, right?
No.
Is that right?
No.
Okay.
One more question.
Again, look, brothers. Mudari verb is not our subject today. Okay, so let's not get lost in the mudari verb. That's ahead of you. You haven't studied mudari verb yet. So don't get stuck on that. Just worry about what is your subject that you're responsible for. Now.
So everything that we're doing, there's no such thing as future verb at this current level, right?
Well, look, let's say like this. The mudari verb, right? And again, this is not our subject. The mudari verb has the meaning, the possible potential meaning of an action that's happening right now, an action that is ongoing continuously, or an action that's going to be done in the future. It has all of those meanings. From the context, you can know the meaning, or if a person wants to specify, limit the meaning to the future, they have to use the particle seen. Or sofa. Okay? Then they limit the meaning to the future. Otherwise, if they don't do that, the mudari verb, it has the potential to mean an action that's happening right now. Or an action that is ongoing. Or an action that will take place in the future. It has the potential to have all of those meanings. And how do you know which meaning is? From the context. From the context. It's clear. From the context. Okay? But again, the mudari verb is not our concern. Don't weigh yourself down with the mudari verb. You have enough to carry with the past tense verb. Believe me. When you start carrying the past tense verb, it will be weighty enough. You won't want to carry any more weight. Okay? It will be sufficient for you. Unless you're a weightlifter. And then we can bring some more on to weigh you down if you like to. No problem. Alright? Okay, let's go on. Let's go on, right? These examples that they have given us here, they have given us so many examples in each category, right? Notice that some of the categories have a lot of examples and some have less and some have little, few examples. And this is an indication. What would you think? What is the reason for this? Because of their rarity. Some group is more common in Arabic, so there are more examples. And another group is kind of rare in Arabic, so there are not a lot of examples. So the ones that you see more examples, that means that that particular group with that combination of vowels is more common in Arabic. But that's not really so important to you because, yani, depends. Yani, which verbs you need that you're going to learn from the group that's more common or less common. Depends on what you're in need of, right? That's what's really important to you. And again, I say to you, if you don't, yani, completely comprehend this classification, that's not important now. But what is important is that when you learn a verb, you must learn what its vowel combination is. Walaikum salam. You hear what I'm saying? Just not. If when you learn a verb, you must learn its vowel combination. No. Yani, when you learn dakhala, you have to know that it's dakhala yadkhulu. You have to do that. Okay? Because if you want to use the mudari form, you have to know what vowel is it going to take. So you have to memorize that. Is there any way for you to know which one it's going to be? There's no way. You just have to memorize it. And it's just like if you want to know how do you say the place where Muslims go to worship, it's called what? Masjid. So how do you know that it's going to be called masjid? Well, you don't know. You just ask somebody or you look it up in the dictionary, English Arabic dictionary, right? And they tell you mosque in Arabic is masjid. That's it. And then once you get that word, you have to memorize it. Some of it is just memorization. There are some hints in certain rules to help you to learn something. But not all the time. Some of it, just has to be memorized. Vocabulary, whether it's nouns or verbs or particles, you have to memorize it. That's it. There's nothing to do except memorize it. Okay, so you have to memorize. Okay, let's take the remaining time. We have a little bit of time left. Not us. We are not in a race, right? But this time that we have left, let's try to concentrate. Please help me by concentrating. Okay, so that if you ask a question, it's because I didn't really make it clear. I don't mind explaining it two or three or four times. That's not a problem. But I don't want to explain it five times because you're not really paying attention. That is a problem. All right? So let's work with each other, inshallah. Concentrate. Still early in the day. I mean, it's not like 9 or 10 o'clock. We haven't been sitting here for 16 hours. So let's try to concentrate. All right? Past tense verb. As far as the conjugation of the past tense verb, we're going to be looking at a number of things. Are you going to memorize all of this today? No. Are you going to memorize all of this in 1 week? Probably not. But if you understand the system, it will help you. What are we going to be looking at? First and foremost, we're going to be looking at the verb, when you conjugate the verb, meaning when you change it to indicate the one who is doing the action. The first thing you're going to look at, is it the first person, the second person, or the third person? Huh? The first thing you're going to be looking at is the one who's doing the action, the first person, second, or third. What do we mean by first person, second person, third person? This is critical for you to understand. First person means me, the speaker. Second person means you, the one I'm speaking to. And the third person means the one we're talking about. So there's the speaker, the one who's being addressed, and the one that they're talking about. That's the first thing we're going to look at. Okay? First person, second person, third person. Persons, first, second, and third, they have words in Arabic that represent them. I'm not so concerned about that right now, because I don't want to overload you with something that may, you'll learn in time, inshallah. But it is important to know that the first person is the first person speaker, mutakallim. The second person, the one who's being addressed, is the mukhatab, with fatha, mukhatab. Mukhatib means speaker, mukhatab with fatha. Okay, and the third person, the one who we're speaking about, is the one that's absent. That's the ghaib. Okay, these Arabic expressions, right now, it's not critical for you, right? But you do have to understand first person, second person, because when we conjugate the verb, we're going to look at first person. We're going to look at second person. We're going to look at third person. The second thing that you need to look at is whether or not the one who's doing the action is masculine or feminine. مُذَكِّرُ مُؤَنَّثُ. Masculine or feminine. And this consideration of masculinity and femininity is not applicable to the first person. Any first person is not, there's no distinction. The one who's speaking, and just by the mere fact that that person is speaking, we know if it's masculine or feminine, okay? But in the second person and third person, we have to know, is it masculine? Is it feminine? Okay? And the third thing that we're going to look at, the one who's doing the action, the number. Is it one person? Is it two? Is it three or more? Is it singular, dual, or plural? As far as the dual, we're not going to look at dual now. And that will come further down the line. Okay? So don't worry about that. But we know that we are considering the number. Is it one person? Is it two people? Is it three? If it's one, then we say singular, right? That's mufrad. If it's two, that's dual, we say it's what? Muthanna. And if there are three or more, in Arabic, plural is three or more, then we say it is what? Jam'. Alright? So these are the three considerations that we want to look at, okay? What's the first consideration? First person, second person, third person. The speaker, the one being addressed, the one that is absent that they're speaking about. The second consideration, the one doing the action is masculine or feminine. And the third consideration, the number. Singular, dual, or plural. Is that clear? Okay, alhamdulillah. If we got that, we made a lot of progress. Now we're going to just look at how do we indicate all these things. In the Arabic verb, all these things that we talked about are indicated in that one word. In one word, all of that is, it tells you all of that. Alright? All of that is indicated. One thing I want to mention, that as we come to it, you know, you'll see it more clearly. The doer of the action in the past tense verb is indicated by a suffix that's added to the end of the word. Except in two forms of the verb. Except in two forms of the verb. The third person, masculine and feminine, singular. There's no suffix added to the end of the word that indicates the doer of the action. Rather, we say the doer of the action here is a pronoun that is hidden. It's not actually a letter that we put or a group of letters that we put here that show you who's the doer of the action. Rather, it's hidden within the verb itself. Okay? So the rest of them, other than these two, huwa and here, other than these two, all the rest of them, there's going to be something added to the root of the verb itself. Something is going to be added there that's going to tell us who's the doer of the action. Okay, there's going to be tu, or ta, or ti, or na, to the corner. Just that, yeah. Help him. No. Turn around. Straighten him out. Zakalakat. Fayyib. So, we're going to see that the suffix that's added to it is going to tell us who's the doer of the action. These suffixes you have to learn. Actually, these suffixes are covered in lesson 8 and 10 and 12 and 13 and 14 and 15 in Medina Book 1. These, the different forms of the verb that indicate the doer of the action, is covered in the series of chapters in Medina Book 1. Okay? We're going to look at them all together today. Now, those of you who are with us, when we were doing Medina Book 1, so you're already familiar with this. And those of you who are not, you might not be familiar with it. I mean, I don't know if you have seen verbs before. But in any case, if you want to go back and see where those things were presented, then it's in the Medina Book from lesson number 8. From lesson number 8. It actually first comes, the first time verbs are into past tense verbs is in lesson number 8. And then it comes back again in 10 and 12 and 13 and 14 and 15. Okay, little by little it's introduced, first person, second person, third person, masculine, feminine, singular, plural, little by little. In each chapter, something is given, okay? So if you go back to Medina Book, yani 1, and you look in chapter number 8, you'll see that the past tense verb is introduced there. Yani he sat, or he entered, or he exited, or something like this, okay? And then you'll see, yani, after that, in successive chapters, in chapter 10, and then 12 and 13 and 14 and 15, you'll see the rest of the conjugation of verbs is given. Okay, so let's look at this, yani, a little bit now, and then next week, inshallah, we'll cover it in detail. All right, turn to page 7. Next page, 7. I want you to understand the chart that they have here a little bit, and I want to caution you from a couple of things here. This chart is actually a little bit advanced for our level, okay? They gave you the full chart of all the conjugation of the verb, and it's a little bit, yani, there's some information here you really don't need, so, yani, don't worry about it, you know? But what I want you to understand, first and foremost, is that the dual forms, and I'll point them out to you. Maybe you put a check next to, for example, if you look down on the right side of the page, you see huwa dhahaba. If you're looking at your page now, you can put a check next to a couple of places, okay? Not huwa, but the one under huwa, huma. That's a dual form. Put a check next to it. We're not going to worry about that. Okay, the third one is hum. That's third person, masculine, plural. We want to look at that one. The next one is here, third person, feminine, singular. We want to look at that one. The next one, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, the fifth one is huma again. That's dual. We're not going to deal with that, okay? Then the next one is hunna, anta, and antuma. Antuma, that's a dual. We don't want to deal with that. Second person, masculine dual. Then you have antum, anti, and antuma again. That's dual. Second person, dual. We're not going to deal with that. So these four, yani the second line across, the second, the fifth, the eighth, and the 11th. All of those are dual forms. Dual forms for second person, dual forms for third person, masculine and feminine. Alright? Those we're not going to deal with. Okay, so I'm just saying that now so that you don't have to worry about those. Don't even worry about them. That's not any, it's not our subject. Okay, that's above our level. The second thing that I want to point out, as we go down the line, okay, try to follow me a little bit, And if you have a question, you can stop, no problem. We have a few minutes, so we're going to just try to go through this once today. And then in the next class, we want to sit down, we want to break it down, and we're going to take one example after another. Different examples, and we're going to look at just what they have given us here. We'll look at it with different verbs, so that we can see it again and again and again. Alright? So, as far as the first column going across, huwa dhahaba. Notice, after huwa dhahaba, it says N-I-L. That's in the column that says suffix. There's no suffix added to this form of the verb. Okay? N-I-L is telling us what? There's no suffix added to this form of the verb. In other verbs, we'll see that there's a letter or something or more than one letter that will be the suffix that's added to the root of the verb in order to indicate the doer of the action, the fa'il. Okay? Going across, huwa, dhahaba, nil. Then it says, mustatirun. If you look down near the bottom of the page, at the end of the chart, the bottom quarter of the page, it says mustatirun, means hidden, implied, understood, tacit. Huh? Mustatirun. What they are saying here is that the pronoun that goes with this verb that tells you who's doing the action is not going to be a suffix added there. Rather, it's something that's hidden. It's implied. It's understood. Okay? It's understood to be huwa. So we're going to see two forms of the verb like this, where the doer of the action is not a suffix, a letter that's added to the root. It's nothing going to be there that is telling us who's doing the action, but this is what's called a pronoun that is implied. It's understood. One of them is this one, huwa, and the other one is here. Okay, all the rest of them, all the other forms of the verb, there's going to be a suffix added. And that suffix is going to tell us who's the doer of the action. Is it clear? Two forms, we don't have a suffix that tells us the doer of the action. Rather, it's understood who's the doer of the action. One of them, walaikum salam, one of them is in this form of the verb for huwa. Huh? One of them is for this form of the verb for huwa, like dhahaba. Dhahaba. There's no suffix added. This is the root of the verb. And the second one is for hiya. Hiya means what? She. Huwa means he. And hiya means she. These two are not going to have a suffix that indicates the doer of the action. As far as hiya, you say dhahabat. Dhahabat. There's a suffix added here, you might say. There's a ta here with sukun, right? But this suffix is not telling us who's the doer of the action. That's not for the purpose of it. This suffix that's added here is just to distinguish huwa dhahaba from here dhahaba. If both of them were dhahaba, then we'll know which one is which, right? So they put this ta here to make us know when we mean huwa and when we mean here. This ta is called ta'anith. A ta'anith. Which means what? Yani for untha, yani femininity. Okay, ta at ta'anith. That's not the doer of the action. That's just to distinguish huwa dhahaba from here. Dhahabat. That's all. It's just to distinguish them. All the rest of them are going to have suffixes added that actually tell us who's the doer of the action. Okay, so this is the first column. Huwa dhahaba. The fa'il, notice in after the suffix it has al-fa'il. And on the bottom of the page, the same place where we see mustatir, we have al-fa'il. Means the subject, i.e. the doer of the action. The doer of the action. What do we mean by fa'il? The one who's doing the action. There's a verb, he ate. Who did the action? He. Huh? They wrote. Who did the action? They. So they is the doer of the action. That's called in Arabic the fa'il. These two words you have to learn them, huh? Mustatir and fa'il. They're on the bottom of the chart. The first line that's under the at the end of the chart, it says mustatir, hidden, implied, understood, tacit. And then right across from it, it says al-fa'il, subject. That is the doer of the action. These two words, you have to know what they are. Okay? You have to know what these two words mean. Mustatir and fa'il. Mustatir and fa'il. Alright? Okay, let's. Now.
We have kadab.
I'm sorry. They use a different example. Alright, so I mean these modifications, sometimes they throw us off a little bit, but don't worry too much about it, right? The same meaning, the meaning is the same, okay? The fa'il is damir mustatir, yani the hidden implied pronoun that is the fa'il, doer of the action. Alright, quickly, let's look down the column. Next week inshallah we come and look at this in detail. The second one is huma. We said we're going to skip that, right? I told you to put a check next to it. We're going to skip that. That's the dual. We don't have to worry about that. The third one is hum dhahabu. Hum dhahabu. Okay, look at this one here. Hum dhahabu. Dhahabu. Now, the root of the verb is what? Dhahaba. So this first letter, thal, ha, and the third letter, ba, that's the root. So what have we had added here? Look what we have added. We have a waw with sukun and we have an aleph. Alright? That suffix, that waw, that suffix that's added to the root, that's the fa'il, the doer of the action. This suffix, waw, here, is called, if you go across the page, you see the fa'il is the waw, the letter, this letter waw. In parenthesis, they have its name. The name of this letter is what? Wow, that's the name of the letter. But this letter right here, this letter right here, this wow, okay, here it doesn't have a vowel, right? It has sukun. But the letter wow, it's, this is its name. Okay, this letter is, according to this chart, right? It says it is the fa'il. It's under the column that says fa'il. So the wow here is the one that's doing the action in the verb form, dhahabu. This wow is called wow al-jama'ah. The wow of plural. This wow is called what? Wow al-jama'ah. It's written there. Wow al-jama'ah. That means it's the wow that indicates plurality. Masculine plurality. Because later on we're going to see noon and niswa. Which means that's the noon of plurality but feminine plurality. Wow al-jama'ah is for masculinity. Noon and niswa is for femininity. Both of them indicate the plural for the verb form, the doer of the action, the fa'il. Okay, after that, we have here. In the fourth line across, we have here, ذهبت. And the suffix that added to it is a ta with sukun. But that ta with sukun is not the fa'il. Rather, the fa'il in the next box is what? مستطرٌ. Means that it's a pronoun that is hidden, implied, tacit, understood. Okay, it's understood to be here. But rather this ta, as you go across, you see it is ta'u at-ta'anif. Ta at-ta'anif. That is the ta is the sign of feminine, femininity. Alright? So here, yani in this verb, dhahabat, there is a suffix added, but it's not the fa'il, it's the sign that this verb is feminine to distinguish it from huwa dhahaba, hiya dhahabat. The next line is huma, that's a dual, we're gonna skip it. The next one is hunna. Third person feminine plural. You see the verb has what? Dhahabna. Dhahab, the root is dhahaba, right? Dhahab. And then there's a suffix added, the noon. Dhahabna, with a single fatha vowel. Here, this noon is the suffix that's added. And this noon is the fa'il. And its name is noon and niswa. Which means the noon of feminine plural. The noon of feminine plural. The next line is anta dhahabta. Anta dhahabta. The suffix that's added is ta. And this ta is actually the fa'il. It's actually the fa'il. What does it indicate? At the beginning of the line you see anta. The ta here means anta. You. Means second person, masculine, singular. In the next line, antuma, that's a dual, we're going to skip it. And the next line is antum, second person masculine plural. You see that the verb, dhahab, and the suffix added to it is tum. This tum, this suffix, is actually the fa'il. It's the fa'il. Yani it means that it is for second person masculine plural, meaning it's the person being addressed, it's masculine, and it's plural. The next line is anti. Yani the pronoun here is anti, meaning the second person, feminine, singular, anti. When you're talking directly to your sister or your mother or your wife or your daughter, anti. You say to her, anti. Huh? So here in the verb form, the suffix that's added for second person feminine singular is what? T. T. Kesra. T. Zahabti. Anti Zahabti. This T is the suffix, and this T is the fa'il. The one who did the action in this verb, Zahabti, is the second person feminine singular. The lady that you are talking directly to, alone. Zahabti. The next one is Antuma. It's a dual. We skip it. And the following one is Antuma. Antuma, second person, feminine plural. Meaning that you're talking directly to a group of females. Second person, feminine plural. The verb here should be Zahabtunna. And Tunna, this suffix, is the actual fa'il or doer of the action. Tunna. So whenever you see a verb, jalas tunna, akal tunna, kara tunna, you know that tunna is for second person, feminine, plural. That's how you address a group of females. The next to the last one is ana zahab tu. The suffix is tu, and that suffix is the fa'il, doer of the action, and tu at the end of a past tense verb indicates the first person, the speaker, ana. Ana dhahabtu. And the last one is nahnu dhahabna. And the suffix that's added to the root of the verb, dhahaba, the suffix that's added is noon with fatta and alif. Na, as opposed to na. Because noon with just a single fatta vowel, not being elongated, is noon and niswa. Na, that means feminine, yani third person plural. So you have to be careful when you see at the end of a verb a noon with fatta as opposed to a noon with fatta and alif. This means one thing, this means something else. Be careful. Okay? Because, yani, even in sound, in speaking, they're almost the same. If a person is not careful, you don't distinguish between this small difference. So you have to pay attention. Okay? When you're speaking and when you're listening. So this last one, nahnu dhahabna, the suffix that's added to the root is na, noon, fatta, alif. And this na suffix, it is the fa'il, the doer of the action. So if somebody says to you, dhahabna ila suqi, dhahabna, who are they saying did the action of going? Nahnu, we. He's saying that he or she is saying, I and others, three or more, we went to the suq. What is the suq? The marketplace. Now, okay, we're going to stop here, right? We went through the chart. We looked at it quickly. Again, the reason why I wanted to cover the chart, yani at least looking at it quickly, I said if we had enough time, we would do that today. I want you to have a chance to study it before you come to class next week. So when you come to class next week, you have plenty of time to look at this. Any question you have, ask them, huh? But come prepared, please. Don't come like this is the first time you've seen this. Okay, I've explained it to you quickly. Naam, I'll give you that, quickly. But I explained it to you, and now you have to go back and look at it. You have 7 days. Please don't come back and say, I was busy for 7 days, I didn't have a chance to look at this. Because that's why I have a stick up there, right? You see the asa up there? Al-asa liman asa. Yani the stick is for the one who's disobedient. If you don't do your homework, we have a stick for you, okay? The sisters are exempt, we can't do anything with them. But the brothers, you're in trouble. Watch out, okay? You have a question, Ibrahim, before we leave?
Yeah. So, pretty much, the application for the huwa and everything, we can apply this to the verbs that we have.
That's right.
Over here in the back.
You can apply that to every one of those verbs. If you want to practice and take any one of those verbs and go down the line with it, you can do it. Just add the suffix, just like, when you add the suffix, though, keep in mind, all right, that when you add the suffix, the last letter of the root is going to take sukoon. Yani the root is dhahaba, right? Here is dhahaba. But when you add a suffix to it, you're going to make this last letter sakin, sukoon, and then you're going to add tu. Dhahab tu. Dhahab ta. Dhahab ti. Dhahab na. Huh? So you have to remember that when you put the suffix on there, you're going to put a sukoon on the last letter, except the third person, masculine plural, hum dhahabu. It's not going to take sukoon, it's going to take dhamma. Followed by a wow, followed by this extra aleph, which is called aleph al-wiqaya, and we'll talk about that maybe next week, inshallah. It's not that important, okay? Subhanakallahumma wa bihamdika, ashhadu an la ilaha illa anta, astaghfiruka wa atubu ilayk.